Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
I made it clear that my intention was to play, and my intention was to play for the New York Jets.
Rodgers going for it all, looking to bring it open. He's got it! Lazard! Gonna go! Touchdown!
Rodgers snaps it quick, scrambles to his right, pumps and runs, and Rodgers is inside the pylon!
Allen has time. Intercepted! Sauce Gardner's got it. Breaking away, Garrett Wilson. Wilson, a big play downfield. Allen tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Breece Lightning, 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast, number 95 for the Jets.
Listen.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for part three of our Memorial Day weekend mailbag with our friend who is the editor over at JetNation.com, Mr. Glenn Naughton. Glenn, appreciate you coming back on. Let's jump right back into the mailbag. Michael Christopher also asks, why hasn't anyone interviewed John Beck and gotten his perspective on what went wrong with Zach Wilson since he was with the Jets and saw firsthand how they were developing him and how it all went wrong? I'm sure the Jets have spoken to John Beck. As far as other people in the media asking John Beck, the thing that's tough is you can ask him these questions, but remember, he was on Zach Wilson's payroll, so tough to get what you know are legitimately honest answers out of somebody in that scenario. How many times have we heard Jordan Palmer come out and say, if only quarterback X were in such and such situation with such and such coach, he could have been a great quarterback. I think he even said that about Christian Hackenberg. So whenever somebody's a client like that, you have to be careful. I would be curious to hear what Beck has to say, but also I would take a lot of it with a grain of salt given what I just said.
Yeah, listen, I think the thing with John Beck, it's basically what you said, Scott. And, you know, you have to consider the fact that he's working for Zach Wilson. The Jets had him on the payroll for a little bit, but he still wants to get consulting work with teams and with players. So he's not going to give honest answers if the team was doing something wrong, because, you know, if you're another team down the road and you think that we want to bring John Beck in for some, you know, to work with us, you're going to say, you know what, that guy went out and badmouthed the Jets afterwards. It's not a matter of him being fired from a job, but it's like they say, when you're interviewing for a job, you don't badmouth your previous employer. You know, you're not going to come out while you're still actively working with players and teams and say, yeah, here's a list of all the things the Jets did wrong. So he's going to give you very canned answers, very generic answers, maybe a tiny bit of insight, but I don't think there's anything of real value to be gained from a guy who's still actively working with players and teams.
Michael Christopher also asks, did it seem to you that Mike LaFleur did not like rookies or developing players? It is kind of strange because when you look back on it, it almost feels like he lost his patience with a lot of those rookies. You heard him going in on Mekhi Becton at certain points. Obviously, we know what happened with Zach Wilson. That article in The Athletic told that story. Denzel Mims wasn't a rookie, but a young receiver, and it seemed like Mike LaFleur lost interest in him really early on. Becton wasn't a rookie, who I mentioned before, but the first year that LaFleur was here with Becton, it seemed like things got contentious pretty quickly. So maybe developing young players is not his strength. Maybe he's better just drawing plays and doing more analytical stuff. But I could see where the perception, at least on the surface, would be that he doesn't necessarily enjoy working with young players. He loses his patience quickly. He certainly did with Zach Wilson, according to that article that came out in The Athletic. That was abundantly clear.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, and it may be the case. And part of you wonders, is it the fact that LaFleur is, as a first-time coordinator, he's trying to create a resume. You know, he wants to impress early on, and so every mistake probably feels a little bit bigger than it would if he were a more established guy who didn't have to worry so much about his future employment. Where, you know, if he had a track record where he can live with some mistakes, where it's not going to damage his reputation. But sort of early on, you're really working to show that you belong. And if you're calling plays or running your offense in a certain way, and you have a, you know, you're going back and looking at the film and saying, damn it, you know, I made the right call here. It would have worked if this guy would have done that, but he didn't know his assignment. I could see you saying, I'd rather just go with a vet who I can count on. Listen, Bill Parcells famously didn't like playing rookies. You know, he did it, but he would often joke with the press about, you know, some of the errors they make, and he had a very short leash with rookies. So he wouldn't be the first guy to do it, and I kind of understand why. So it's a fair observation.
Next question comes in from JP Waxer. He asks, are we all getting a little swept up in the euphoria? Just tell me I'm not hallucinating over the team's expectations. Yeah, there are some people that are getting a little crazy right now in terms of booking tickets to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl this early. I'll say that's a little crazy, but you can't blame people. They're excited because the Jets haven't had this level of expectation in a really long time. They finally got a quarterback that has a proven track record of being elite. They haven't had that since Brett Favre, so that's very different. I think as far as expectations go, it really depends where you're at. If you're at the point where you think the Jets are a likely playoff team who are going to be in the mix for the division, and by virtue of being in the playoffs, have a chance to go to the Super Bowl, then I think your expectations are right in line with where they should be. I think we talked about this on the show following the Jets' schedule release. Ultimately, if you look at the schedule and break it down, there's no reason why the Jets couldn't win somewhere around 10, 11 games. And if one or two things go their way and they get a little lucky, maybe a little bit more than that. Now, obviously, the downside is if they get a little unlucky, they could win a little bit less. And if they have any kind of major issues that we're not anticipating, that could also change things as well. But for now, I think having expectations of this team being successful this year is good. Maybe don't book a flight and a hotel room and buy tickets for the Super Bowl just yet. That might be taking it a little too far, but being happy about where the team is at and being excited to watch them play in 2023 and think that they're going to be a very good team, that I think is right in line with where everybody probably is and should be.
Everyone's pumped up right now, even for those of us who feel like there's still work to be done with this roster. It's still there. Are they good enough right now to make the playoffs? Absolutely. But when you start looking at those top three or four teams that you like for the Super Bowl, are they at that level? I'm not sure they are. But listen, after as long as we've waited for just a playoff spot, fans should absolutely enjoy the hell out of this. You know, I had this thought the other day, Scott. Listen, I get that it's all about Super Bowls, and that's why we watch, and that's the whole point of all this. I get that, and I'm not saying that this is something the Jets fans should be satisfied with, because once you've given up all you've given up to get Aaron Rodgers, the Super Bowl should be the goal or the expectation. But even all of that aside, like, this year should be, again, everything is barring injury. If all the key players stay relatively healthy, this should be the most fun Jets fans have had watching football in a very long time. And that counts for something. I'm not saying they should be happy with it, but listen, you can be terrible and not make the playoffs, or you can be really good and win a lot of games and have a lot of fun and enjoy your Sundays and come up short. Neither one is what you want, but one is certainly better than the other. And this year should be the fun one, and I'm looking forward to that.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from James. He asks, who was your least favorite draft pick of all the guys that the Jets selected during the draft process? I don't really know how to answer that because I did kind of like most of the players the Jets got. The only thing I could say is there were a couple of players that I did really like that were still on the board in the fifth and sixth round. Xavier Hutchinson from Iowa State stands out in my head. That would have been fun, get another Iowa State wide receiver to go with Allen Lazard and another Iowa State player to go with Lazard, Breece Hall, and of course Will McDonald. I like Luke Whippler and the idea of grabbing him in the fifth round and having him and Joe Tippmann as a center guard combo going forward. I just thought the value was too good to pass up. The Jets obviously felt otherwise. So I don't know that there's one that I have as a least favorite, but there are other players that I would have liked in some of those spots, and the Jets didn't take them. We'll see if the Jets end up being right or if the players that I talked about wind up being significant contributors elsewhere.
Yeah, you know, there are really no players in the class I didn't like, so it's tough to say which pick I liked the least. I didn't love the approach, so I guess from that standpoint, as I said, I probably would have preferred more guys who were likely to contribute, you know, a nice chunk of reps early on, with this being a year where, you know, with this being a short window for the Jets. But maybe, you know, in the sixth round, instead of taking Bernard Converse, I really like Dante Stills, the defensive tackle out of West Virginia, and he was still on the board. I would have liked to have seen that. D. Winters, the linebacker from TCU, was another one. He went where he should have gone in the sixth, seventh round, but my God, if you want, you go back and watch TCU against Michigan in that playoff game, and D. Winters looked like a game wrecker. He looked like he'd be a first round pick. If that was the only game you saw him play, you would have thought he was a first rounder. But Bernard Converse, again, he brings some versatility. He could be a valuable player, but, you know, in that range, I was kind of looking at Dante still being on the board and would have liked him there. And Demario Douglas out of the slot would have been an option too, out of Liberty.
Next question comes in from NYJ Flight Club. He asks, do you think Aaron Rodgers' stardom will be more of a distraction to the team like the media is saying? We had guys mention it earlier this week. Do you think it'll fade away or become a real problem throughout the season? I don't think it matters. Aaron Rodgers has been a global brand forever. Yeah, he's enjoying himself going to like Madison Square Garden and such, but he's recognized anywhere he goes. He's one of the most famous faces in the world, one of the most famous athletes. I don't think it matters at all. He's used to it. He's talked about it. He said it on the Michael Kay show. He's been in the spotlight for as long as he can remember at this point. And so it's not going to bother him. And I don't think it's going to bother the team unless Rodgers starts doing things that the team sees as detrimental to them, and or they start losing and fingers start getting pointed. With losses, anything's on the table. We've seen that in the past with a bunch of different teams, not just the Jets. If you go throughout any sport, once the losing starts, problems could arise and people start to get jealous and all that. But no, it seems like as of now, everybody's fine with it. They're just glad that Aaron Rodgers is here and they believe they have a chance to win. I don't see his stardom, which has existed for as long as he's been a star quarterback in the NFL, so over a dozen years, I don't see that being a problem.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's early on, like you're hearing players say, like, I just wanted to line up for a couple of reps and just watch, like, oh my God, that's Aaron Rodgers. But once you get some practices under your belt and the game start, it's game time. You know, players aren't going to be affected by Aaron Rodgers' level of stardom on Sundays, and that's really what matters most. And really, this year, probably Monday nights a fair bit. But yeah, I don't think it'll be a factor. I think a little, guys are a little starstruck right now, but once he settles in and becomes one of the guys and they're out there doing the work with him, it's, you know, they'll still have, the respect level for him will be through the roof. But I think in terms of it being a distraction with him being there, I don't think it will at all.
It's funny, Glenn, I didn't even take it the way that you just did, but you're probably right. That's probably what the question meant. I answered it more in terms of if Rodgers' stardom was going to be a distraction for the rest of the team in terms of him being out there and being on magazine covers or whatever. But
right,
you're right.
Right.
That is probably what he was talking about, the team being distracted by being in awe of Rodgers. I don't think that's going to be an issue. If you'll recall when Favre was here, you heard players talking like that at the beginning. In fact, Kerry Rhodes was on the show. We went through the 2008 season. He said he grew up with a poster, Brett Favre, on his wall, so it was surreal for him to be on the same team with Favre. But as you said, Glenn, after a couple of practices, Kerry Rhodes got over it, and Brett Favre was just the quarterback of the team he played on, and I think that'll be the case with these guys. Yes, they're in awe of the superstar quarterback who many of them grew up idolizing being here, but I think once they get used to him being here. They'll get acclimated to having him as their leader and as their quarterback, and it's not going to be a situation where they're just distracted by Aaron Rodgers' greatness the way that somebody would be distracted by a beautiful woman walking by or something. I don't think that's going to be the case, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. Next question comes in from Luca B. He asks, I don't see how anyone can believe that Zach Wilson is fixable. All of his problems are mental, not physical. You can't rectify slow decision making and non-existent pocket presence. Just look at Mark Sanchez. It's not really the same thing as Mark Sanchez, because Zach Wilson was a quick decision maker and a fast processor at BYU. But I think once he started to struggle, he started to second guess himself here with the Jets. And then things started to get really difficult, to the point where he was missing layup throws. He was overthinking and everything like that. As far as the pressure, that's something that obviously has to be worked on. Can it be fixed? Can he become a quarterback that finds ways to deal with the pressure better than he has so far? That I couldn't tell you. But as far as the other stuff, it's definitely more fixable. Remember, Mark Sanchez was a totally different story. He wasn't a guy that was really able to read defenses when he came to the Jets, and that was something Pete Carroll voiced concern about when Sanchez came out. If you remember, Carroll said that he thought Sanchez should stay another year, which Sanchez himself didn't really like to hear, but in the end, maybe Pete Carroll was right. But as far as his ability to read defenses, he was never able to progress in that area. Gerard Mayo, who is now on the Patriots coaching staff, told the story on a podcast once about how everybody on opposing teams knew that Sanchez couldn't recognize coverages. So when he would get to the line, they would start yelling stuff to confuse him, because Nick Mangold would be calling out and yelling out the protections. And so if the opposing defenses could yell and jumble what Sanchez was hearing, it might mess him up. That wasn't the case with Zach Wilson. He was able to recognize coverages. He was good at reading the field. He was good at processing at BYU. Mason Wake, the fullback from BYU, was on the show and really broke that down from the perspective of somebody who played with Zach Wilson. Mark Sanchez had a different issue. He just couldn't read defenses at all. But like I said, I think the problem with Wilson is once he started to struggle, he started to second guess himself, and then everything fell out of whack mentally. He started overthinking things. He was missing layups. It's like when somebody gets the yips in golf, or sometimes you see it in baseball with a closer who blows a save, and then all of a sudden he starts second guessing himself on pitch location and the different pitch selection that he's involved in. You see it with shooters in the NBA. Sometimes they struggle with their shot. They lose their confidence. I think that's a lot of what happened with Zach Wilson. Can that be fixed? And can he be brought back into the proper place mentally? I'm not sure, but we're going to find out over the next couple of years whether Aaron Rodgers and Nathaniel Hackett are the two guys that can get him back to where they need him to be mentally in order for him to be the caliber of quarterback that they thought he was going to be when the Jets drafted him at number two overall in 2021.
Yeah, I think the reading defenses and, you know, making quick decisions, I think that is something you can work on. I think that can come with reps. Now, the problem is he won't get as many reps now since he's not the starter. But that all comes from – we hear it all the time with rookies at every position. But, you know, especially at quarterback, as you see guys improving, the thing you always hear analysts and coaches and even the players themselves, they'll say the game is slowing down for me now. Like, I've been doing this long enough now that I'm not overwhelmed by the speed of what's happening in front of me, and it's slowing down, so I'm able to make better decisions. So that's kind of Zach Wilson's goal there. And there have been times, as you mentioned, Scott, where he appears to make the right read, but he lacks that confidence, and he'll pump. He looks like he's going to make the throw, but he holds onto the ball, and then the pressure comes, and then he scrambles, and then, you know, disaster strikes. So I think that with reps, that can get better. But then again, the mental part, and this is what I've said, I think for him it's all mental right now, or the majority of it. And the example I used going back to last year when I went to the London game against the Falcons, I came out of that game saying, this kid is Chuck Knoblauch right now. Like, he does have the yips. He's got, you know, the softball throws that he's bouncing in front of receivers and bouncing in front of running backs where he's not even close. And that hasn't gone away. And that's really what was most concerning, because once you notice that, you're like, all right, let's see how this goes over the next 8, 10, 12 weeks. Here we are a year and a half later, and it hasn't gotten better. So my concern is the, as you said, and I, you know, I've said in the past, with him having the yips, and is this something that's going to go away? It didn't go away for Chuck Knoblauch, Yankee second baseman. They moved him to the outfielder. Mets catcher Mackie Sasser had it. The Mets moved him to right field, and they weren't able to fix it with those guys. If they can't fix it with Zach, he'll be done. He'll be out of the league.
Glenn Naughton, editor, Jet Nation, thanks so much for coming on and answering mailbag questions here on this Memorial Day weekend. Really appreciate it. For everybody that wants to follow you on social media and check out what you're doing over at JetNation.com, how can they follow you and what's going on over at Jet Nation?
Check me out on Twitter, JNRadio_Glenn, and check us out at JetNation.com. We're on Twitter. You can check out the site and the forums. Most active independent Jets message board on the web. Always tons of activity, tons of conversations. Some really knowledgeable fans over there. Some lunatics too, but you know, it's we're a gathering of thousands of people, so it takes all types. But really, in all seriousness, it's a good time. Check out the forums at JetNation.com, and check out my partner Dylan Terriman on Twitter at dterriman, T-E-R-E-M-A-N, and we'll go live Thursday nights at 6:30, and most Fridays I'm live with Chris Schubert of the Draft Network. We will not be doing a show this Friday, but we'll be back next week.
Make sure you check out everything Glenn's doing over at JetNation.com, and be sure to check out everything that we've got over at PlayLikeAJet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel. The Thunder from Down Under, Luke Grant, has some awesome All-22 breakdowns on our channel, including the top draft picks for the Jets in the 2023 draft, Carter Warren, Israel Abanikanda, Will McDonald, Joe Tippmann, and much more. It's over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/playlikeajet. So watch our videos, subscribe if you haven't already. Visit our store, teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. We've got the John Franklin Myers, Quinnen Williams, Bless You, Thank You shirt, the Play Like a Jet logo shirt, caps, mugs, hoodies. It's all there, teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. And be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you can go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. For the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and PlayLikeAJet.com.